As with every true pearl, there was a sand grain of truth at the heart of Bond. Fleming wrote thrillers informed by his actual experience. Years spent working out of the hothouse environment of Room 39 of the Admiralty Building, headquarters of the Naval Intelligence Division of the Royal Navy, gave him a ringside seat on the operations of a major espionage organization. On various trips to Washington, D.C., he worked with diplomats and officers of the OSS, predecessor organization to the CIA. There is also some evidence that, as a foreign news manager at the Sunday Times after the war, Fleming made his agency's facilities available to officers of MI6. His first Bond novels were submitted to that agency for security clearance before they were published. Bond himself may have been larger than life, but the strictures imposed by the organization he worked for were drawn from reality, albeit the reality of an intelligence agency of the early 1940s. The world of secret intelligence gathering during the Second World War was, however, very different from life in the intelligence community today. It was already changing by the late 1950s, as the bleeping, football-shaped Sputniks zipped by overhead and intelligence directors began dreaming of spy satellites. By 2004, when MI5, the counterintelligence agency, openly placed recruiting advertisements in the press, we can be sure that Bond would have been best advised to seek employment elsewhere. Spies are supposed to be short, less than 180 centimetres, 5 feet 11 inches for men, and nondescript. As a branch of the civil service, MI5's headquarters are presumably non-smoking and drinking on the job is frowned upon. As intelligence agencies, MI5 and MI6 staffs aren't in the business of ruthlessly wiping out enemies of the state. Any decision to use lethal force lies with the Foreign Secretary, the Cobra Committee, and other elements of the British government's security oversight bureaucracy. An MI6 agent driving a 1933 Bentley Racer with a supercharged engine, frequenting the high-stakes table at a casino, as James Bond so memorably did in his first print appearance, is an almost perfect inversion of the real picture. Nevertheless, the archetype has legs. James Bond continued to grow and evolve even after his creator put away his cigarette holder for the last time. To some extent, this was the product of storytelling expediency. The film adaptation started in the middle of a continuing story arc, for Fleming wrote his novels with a modicum of continuity, and while Dr. No was the first to make it to celluloid, the novel was in fact a sequel to From Russia with Love, which was filmed second. Thus, various liberties were taken with the plot of the canonical novels right from the start. You can read the novels at length without finding anything of the banter between Bond and M's secretary Moneypenny that is a recurrent theme of the films, for example. And that's before we get into the bizarre deviations of the mid-period Roger Moore movies, notably The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. The literary James Bond is a creature of pre-war London clubland, upper crust, snobbish, manipulative, and cruel in his relationships with women, with a thinly veiled sadomasochistic streak and a coldly ruthless attitude to his opponents that verges on the psychopathic. Over the years, his cinematic alter ego has acquired the stamina of Superman, learned to defy the laws of physics, ventured into space, both outer and inner, and deflowered more maids than Don Juan. He's also mutated to fit the prejudices and neuroses of the day, dabbling with gasp monogamy and hanging out with those heroic Afghan mujahideen in the late 80s, AIDS and Soviets era, the living daylights. He's worked under a ball-breaking post-feminist M in GoldenEye and even confronted a female arch-villain in The World Is Not Enough, an innovation that would surely have Fleming, who formed his views on appropriate behaviour for the fairer sex in the 1920s, rolling in his grave. But other aspects of the Bond archetype remain timeless. Fleming was fascinated by fast cars, exotic locations, and intricate gadgetry. And all of these traits of the original novels have been amplified and extrapolated in the age of modern special effects.